Coming to you live from the Cultural Hall, this is the Mormon News Report for the week of January 29th, 2018. We are...
You know what, Brian, here's the thing. I'm really excited this week, so I got a little anxious and I cut you off. Go ahead. We have an intro. We have an opening. We got to do it. So let's just we'll do it live, Brian. We'll do it live.
I can't finish after this. It's like the momentum is gone. The spark is gone. The energy is gone. It's just all, it's withered.
Brian, did I ruin our special moment? Is that what happened?
Because I think it was a buzzkill, Brent.
I was a little too.
I mean, okay, here we go. I'll try to finish.
All right.
We're your weekly dose of Mormonism or something.
Coming at you with a tombstone pile driver amount of snark. And if you don't like that, I've got a mean cobra clutch that I can put you in. This is the sacrifice I'm making tonight, everyone. It is the 2018 Royal Rumble. And yet here I am snarking it up with you because that's how important this stuff is.
Are you missing the Royal Rumble for this?
I am missing the Royal Rumble for this.
I'm sure that our listeners would have been completely understanding if we said we can't do tonight's show because of the 2018 Royal Rumble. We could have just done this tomorrow. It would have been fine. Nobody cares.
Listen, I would hope that this is where everyone is watching tonight. They're watching the Royal Rumble because it's kind of a big deal. But no, this is where I'm at. So
we got a duty. We have a duty.
That is right.
Even a sacred duty. And hey, we've got a great guest too. Heather Harris, I'm going to start that over. Heather Harris Bergevin is going to be talking lawless women. And I think that we might have a little special guest drop by later on with Geralyn Hassel Poole. I'm not 100% positive about that. We're going to see. She might be taking her husband into the emergency room, or she might be ready to join us. We're going to see. We're going to pray. We're going to pray that Geralyn Hassel Poole will be able to join us to talk about some of the chatter online this week. You know, we've got a lot going on, Brent. We have a lot going on.
You know, hopefully a couple of things. Hopefully Geralyn is sober this time. Since the last time we talked with her, she was sucking NyQuil.
NyQuil drunk, yeah.
And I know that we only have you at about 60% this week since you've been fighting a cold. I don't know what it is about this cold. You know, this is where we know that we are old people, as we're sitting here talking about the weather and colds and things like that. So, Brian, if you need to, you could suck it up for the team, and I won't tell anybody that you're over there sucking NyQuil out of a straw, too. You may or may not
be. No, it's just straight whiskey for me.
Oh, so you're not going to have your full mental faculty, which I don't. That could be a good thing for the show. I don't know.
I don't know what it would do to our ratings or my temple recommend, but, you know, it's a thing. Hey, let's get right into this with the question from last week. The question from last week was, what were your thoughts on the new LDS Church First Presidency press conference? We thought it was a little weird. So, what did we get, Brant?
Okay, so Hot Girl at Hot Girl, HAWKGRRR, that's 3RSL, who is Angela Clayton. She's a great writer over at BCC and at Wheat and Tear. She wrote, the press conference was unscripted. That's both good and bad. The answers about the women and the millennials were pretty unhelpful, and these are important topics. Excited about Uchtdorf and Razban's assignment. We're going to talk about Uchtdorf's assignment. She's referencing Ronald A. Razban's assignment on the Utah Task Force for Suicide, which was a good thing. Here's another follow that all of you on Twitter should be looking at. Provo All-Star, that is at Provo_All-Star. His thoughts on the press conference, how are we going to fit his name into the primary song?
And that's so good. That's
so
good.
This is a conversation we were having on Twitter, Brian. Where do you remember in that Follow the Prophets song? Like, we always kind of ended at certain points. I remember ending it at Benson. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait, now people are used to doing Hunter, Hinckley, Monson, and now Nelson. So where do you remember ending it at?
I checked out after, like, Noah.
No.
Seriously. I was just like, I was done. Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but yeah.
All right. Fair point. But Provo All-Star makes a good point. This is going to be, generations will be influenced now by this next stanza in that primary song. We got an interesting email. John English said, I don't feel good about the press conference or about the first presidency. Most of the answers weren't really answers. They were patronizing to the reporters. They skirted around the issues and really bad when it came to topics of LGBT women and why all the apostles are white. It made me think that the only press conference Nelson would ever do, that was the only press conference Nelson would ever do, and that Oaks is going to be co-president, ready to jump on every question. I don't know. People thought Joseph Fielding Smith and Ezra Taft Benson were going to be big hardliners, bigger hardliners than they really were. And I don't really disagree with him. I think he makes some valid points there, but that's kind of always been my perspective when it comes to this new first presidency is, okay, show me what you got. Let's see what you got. Where are we going with this? I don't want to. It was the same attitude I took towards Trump when Trump was elected. You've said a lot of things in the past. Let's see how you are as a president. I have my own personal feelings on where he's at as a president, and that's the way I'm kind of viewing this new first presidency is, let's see where you're at. Let's let your actions as a first presidency dictate how we're going to view you in history. And I think even 10 days after, there's some interesting stuff that happened.
Right. I think there's an interesting story this week that we're going to get to later on that, yeah, if it's an indication, might be a good thing.
So we got a couple voicemails, too.
We got a voicemail.
No, Brian, we got three voicemails. First off, we need to give a shout out to our buddy Rob Ferry from Zion, Utah. Make sure you check him out on Articles of News on the Cultural Hall. You can find it on the Cultural Hall feed. They kind of do the same thing as us. They snark it up a little bit. Rob's a good guy.
Did I tell you that I was on Rob's trivia game on Friday that he did on Facebook Live?
That's right.
And I won. I won a crappy poop pillow. In fact, I told him, I said, you can keep the crappy pillow.
Listen, do not deny the power that sending a poop emoji through text message has on people. It will change their lives either for the good or for the bad. So
business with Brandt.
Yeah. Listen, business with Brandt is a very powerful thing that we all need to remember. So Rob sent us two voicemails, but we also got one from Andrew, which, hey guys, I will say this. I love getting these voicemails. I listen to every single one of them. It's like the joy of my week when I get an alert that we got a voicemail. So keep sending them in. Andrew from Kansas City, Missouri, actually had the hot take of the week. So, Rob, you got to step yours up a little bit. Let's take a listen to what Andrew had to say.
What's up, guys? This is Andrew. I'm calling you from Kansas City. My thought on the press conference, please, can we keep the Deseret News and KSL News out of those kind of press conferences? Every time the reporters got up, they might as well have said, "How's it going, boss?" And the questions are such a softball nature. I mean, look at what the reporter from KSL said. I forgot what his name was real fast. But when I heard it, I was thinking, really, dude? All right. That was just my thought. Thanks, guys.
So, okay. So
can we keep the church-owned news out of our press conferences, please?
I actually thought that was great. That's hey, great. Boss. How's hey, it boss. Going?
Yeah. Let me ask you a super tough, hardball question. What do you think it's going to be like?
Listen, I also like that because he's exactly right. Like I always tell this to people, and I have the benefit of not being either from Utah or living in Utah, so I'm kind of an insider when it comes to Mormonism because I'm part of the LDS Church. But I'm also this outsider when it comes to some of these things because I watch that and go, this is such a weird interaction. And it's fascinating to watch how you have some questions from some groups and some questions from other groups. It is awesome to watch. And there's a part of me that agrees with him. But Brian, I think you and I are in the same camp. There's a lot of debate sometimes in Utah about should the Deseret News be the only newspaper in Utah or the Salt Lake Tribune. And I am firmly in the camp that Utah really does need to be a two newspaper town because from what we've seen, even doing the news, there's so much that they play off of each other. You get some from one side, some from the other side. I'm not saying one is completely correct or one is completely incorrect, but you have to have those two parts to make that whole.
Oh, don't throw the Standard Examiner under the bus here, Brandt. We're a 2.5 newspaper town.
Well, and if we want to throw the Daily Herald in there, we're a 2.75 right. newspaper.
Exactly. So let's get on with the news because we've got a lot to cover and not much time to cover it.
Man, it's every single week. I swear. It's like, okay, this is a slow week. And Brian, this was a slow week until we looked at our show sheet and was like, story after story after story. Let's start with what we always like to start with, Mormon politics. And this is from the files from Thomas Burr at the Salt Lake Tribune. Mitt Romney would romp to Senate victory over Jenny Wilson if election were held today. So a quick shout out to Thomas Burr. He wrote a great book called Mormon Rivals. And I want to say it was published back in 2013 or 2014. I'm sorry, it was published in 2015. That's when it was. It was about the interesting relationship between the Romneys and the Huntsmans after the 2012 election. So if you really liked getting to know a little bit more about that time period, go pick up that book. So this is a poll by the Salt Lake Tribune and the University of Utah Hinckley Institute. And Brian, I hope you're sitting down because this might shock you, okay? Their poll found that Romney would win with 64% of the vote compared to 19% of the vote for Democrat Jenny Wilson if the election was held today for the seat of retiring U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch.
To be honest, I'm surprised that it's that close of a race.
I mean, I think we all were. So here's the interesting thing. 85% of Republicans backed Romney, which, again, I thought it would be more in the 90% range, but 85, okay, 85 is still 85. But this is the key, as well as 55% of voters who are unaffiliated. And I think that's the big thing, is those unaffiliated voters are going to play a bigger and bigger role as things go on. And 18% of Democrats, one in five Democrats, would support Mitt Romney. So it leads back to what we've been saying. Romney's going to basically have free reign in Utah. And I think that when you have a political candidate who is not concerned about re-election possibilities, they can start doing a lot of things. And it's no surprise and it's no shock to people that Romney and Trump have a little bit of a thing going on. There's a bit of a tension between those two. And so I kind of want to see Romney on the Senate floor just saying whatever he wants, because you know he's going to go back to Utah and there will be like the red carpet rolled out and roses laid down. They are going to love anything that he does.
And, you know, to be honest, I think that Romney is getting a little bit more bold. I mean, at least his online persona is getting more bold. But I have a feeling that if he gets on the Senate floor, he's not going to be holding back that much. I don't think he's going to be polite Romney up there kind of hemming and hawing and folding his hands. I think that he's going to speak his mind.
Well, but I think what we saw, and this, I will credit you with pointing this out, the big thing is going to be looking at Romney's voting record as he's a U.S. senator, because you could say the same thing about Jeff Flake, but we pointed out Jeff Flake consistently votes with Donald Trump. Now, I don't think it's specifically because of Donald Trump. I think it's more party allegiance, but let's see how much of a maverick Romney wants to be. Because I think out of anybody out there, he would be a great maverick, because what's he got to worry about, right? Like, he ran for president. He was the Republican nominee. So
McCain can retire the title and give it to Romney.
He can give it to Romney, something, something, Constitution hanging by a thread, White Horse, Romney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let's continue on with the politics. This shocked me. A Democrat in the Deseret News, because when you sent this link to me, I didn't believe you at all. This is from Justin Dyer, who's an assistant professor at BYU. In an op-ed he wrote, he said, perhaps Mormons are the most politically malleable. So he was looking at this Gallup poll that we had talked about that said that Mormons, out of all religious groups, were the most supportive of Donald Trump. But then he gets into data. And Brian, you know me, I love when people start digging into data, especially Pew Research data, because that place is a goldmine. So what he saw within the Pew Research data was that Trump lost 18% of the Mormon vote compared to years past. This is what he says. That is, in an era where political affiliation has become a more important identification than almost any other, often including religious identifications, Mormons, more than any other group, were willing to abandon the Republican candidate. So the other thing that came out of the 2016 election, the third party candidate in Utah, Evan McMullen, this is what he said. Thus, in 2016, a Mormon was more likely to move away from the Republican candidate, Trump, than any other voter from any other religious groups, even the religiously unaffiliated, who had voted for a Republican in the previous two presidential elections. Okay, that's even more interesting. Let's talk about the and I think he described it, these are my words, not his, but almost as a naughty word, a Republican voting for a Democrat. So this is what he said about Mormons voting for Democrats. Out of all religious and non-religious groups surveyed, Mormons who had previously voted for Republican appear to have been the most likely to be convinced to vote for a Democrat. And this is what he wraps up with. Mormons should not be viewed monolithically, but rather as a diverse group willing to take into account more than just how we've always voted. And this is the Deseret News, and I'm sitting here going, this is great. And I, this leads back to my whole theory on why Utah needs to be a two newspaper town, because the Deseret News, look, we bag on it a little bit, but they consistently surprise me on the good content that they have come out. And this is a great piece that they put out.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a tough piece to read, because it's hard not to look at that 61% approval rating as being this, you know, the singular highest approval rating among any religious group, and not say that, that we're monolithic, right? To say that this is actually a sign that we have dipped from our typical support of a Republican candidate, and that there's more malleability among Mormons than there was in the past. So it's almost flipping the script on what the news articles made it seem like, that reporting off of that data.
And I would say this too, this is actually a big part of our show, which is showing that Mormonism is a very diverse group. And I don't mean diverse as far as race or culture or anything like that. Just the coverage of Mormonism, that is what is happening now in 2017. That is, in my personal opinion, and I listen, I'm no reporter, okay? I'm just a weirdo who really likes following Mormon news. But in my personal opinion, what happened out of the Mormon moment was that people began taking Mormonism as a group and as a culture much more seriously. And so what you're seeing, especially when it comes to things like LGBT issues and women's issues, we are showcasing more and more diversity in these areas.
So real quick, one of the things that got Mormons into a lot of heat, wherever they settled, whether it was Missouri, whether it was Nauvoo, here's your history lesson for the night, by the way, was voting as a block, voting for one party or one candidate based on what either Joseph Smith or Hiram Smith recommended. So if Joseph Smith said, hey, I'm going for the Whig candidate, then you better believe that all of Nauvoo was going for the Whig candidate. Same way if it was a Democrat, which they did. They flipped back and forth between Democrats and Whigs based on who was going to show the Mormons the most love. So one thing that Mormons do need to be wary of, and this is why I think Eugene England, for instance, called for increasing diversity within among Mormons. He wrote an essay once titled, Why More Mormons Should Vote Democrat. And it was simply so that we can break up the monolith, right? It wasn't because they need to embrace the Democratic Party as much as it was that we need to break up the idea of Mormons being a block vote, a solid block vote for a particular for a particular party affiliation. So I think that we're seeing some of that with the next rising up generation, particularly with the millennials, who are far more split and diverse than the previous generations have been.
So speaking of millennials, we all know that millennials really, really love Dieter F. Uchtdorf. And Uchtdorf? Uchtdorf? I did not mean to say Uchtdorf. I meant to say Uchtdorf.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that, Brand. I think that you were, I don't know if you were channeling like a message towards millennials or if it was like a meme thing going on there. But anyway, this is our Uchtdorf watch.
Here we go. Uchtdorf watch. Everyone was wringing their hands. What's going to happen to Uchtdorf? He's been demoted. I heard people saying, this is from the Mormon newsroom. Assignments announced for Elder Uchtdorf. The assignments given to Elder Uchtdorf include chair of the Missionary Executive Council, chair of the Correlation Executive Council, and the primary contact for the Europe and the Europe East areas, which, by the way, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back because I got that right. I totally got that right. I'm not saying that I'm like anybody major.
He was going to get Europe? Is that what you said?
I said he was going to get Europe. I said he was going to be heavily involved in Europe because of the stagnation growth there. But then again, like anybody who could see that, you know, Uchtdorf is German, he comes from Europe, he spent a lot of time in Europe, et cetera, et cetera.
Now you put two and two together, it kind of seems to make sense.
Uchtdorf will represent the Office of the First Presidency and the Quorum of the Twelve in his capacity as chair of the Missionary Executive Council, where he will direct the global operation of all missionary activities of the church. The Correlation Executive Council reviews and approves all church materials and products, which leads to an interesting discussion that was happening in a lot of circles this week, Brian. Okay, he's going to be over the Correlation Department.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And I heard a lot of people talking a lot about his potential impact that he could have over the Correlation Department. But I found something that was really interesting, and this is from Nate Oman. Nate Oman is a blogger at Times and Seasons, but he posted this on his own personal blog. And this, ladies and gentlemen, my fellow listeners, is what we call a hot take. Title of this is Why Elder Uchtdorf is Still Going to Be Really, Really, Really Important. So here's what he said. Bookish people are going to be interested in the books and other materials that the church produces, and they are rightly concerned at the way that the homogenizing effect of Correlation tends to dumb down official church materials in a way that whitewashes difficult questions and trades inoffensive cliches for real spiritual content. Cheering all around, the Elder Uchtdorf, known for a willingness to acknowledge mistakes and engage sensitively with difficult questions, will be in charge of Correlations. Okay, we can all agree with that, right? Like having someone with the mindset of Elder Uchtdorf over Correlation is probably, I don't want to say probably, it will be very interesting to see potentially the directions that like Sunday school things and everything goes after that.
So what I can say is that Elder Uchtdorf, President Uchtdorf, has been known historically for being friendly towards the history department and the initiatives. He was one of the early ones that was really excited about the Joseph Smith papers, for instance. I think that from a historical perspective, I think that he's the right guy for the job.
So here's where it gets interesting. Continuing with Nate's piece, I suspect, however, that directing the Missionary Executive Council is far, far more important. We are now in a moment that looks like the early 20th century, low growth rates and the tentative search for new methods and messages. There are lots of starts and stops, and the church as an institution tends to be conservative and risk averse. But I think that the overall trajectory suggests that the search for a new missionary model. I don't know what that model will look like. What I am willing to wager on is that once a successful proselytizing model, message, and practice is discovered, the church will gradually be transformed in the image of that model.
I mean, really, all that you need is commercials of Elder Uchtdorf saying, come, join us. And it's
that's all you, that's and all. You know what? Maybe we could go down this like really bold and progressive and groundbreaking way, unprecedented way of... I don't know, maybe our missionaries go out there and do service and I don't know, we take into real seriousness that scripture, something, by their fruit shall you know them. Hey, we see you're out here doing good work. Maybe we get to know a little bit more about you. And hey, I kind of like that. Instead of 1950s, white shirts, knock, knock, knock. You want to hear a message about Jesus.
I think we should start bringing people fruit baskets and with little messages that says, by your fruits ye shall know them.
I mean,
that's a dad joke, Brant. It's a dad joke.
You know what? Here's the thing. Maybe I am becoming too old because I'm sitting here going, well, I'd take a fruit basket if you brought over a fruit basket. I'd listen to you. Listen, it should not be a surprise to anybody. If you go out and you buy me a $1 cheesy bean and rice burrito from Taco Bell, you're going to have me for an hour. So let's make the best. All right, so let's go to my kryptonite. I mentioned before, I'm really, really, anytime Pew puts something out about Mormons, like, I'm in, right? The American religious groups vary widely in their views on abortion. This is from David Massey of the Pew Research Fact Tank. So according to a recent survey that they did, most Americans, 50%, are supportive of legal abortion, but a substantial minority, 40%, say abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. So this is the most recent survey that they did back in 2017. It looks like we're even, but we're leaning a little more towards we are supportive of legal abortion. So what about the different religious groups? They didn't do this survey in 2017. The religious group survey was done back in 2014. According to a 2014 U.S. religion landscape poll by Pew, 70% of Mormons say abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. 27% say it should be legal in all or most cases, and 2% said they don't know. What about the other religious groups? Jehovah's Witnesses were the strongest against of all religious groups, who said 75% said it should be illegal, while Unitarian Universalists, 90%, and American Jews, 83%, were supportive of legal abortion, excluding agnostics and atheists. So I don't think it's a surprise that Mormons are against abortion. I was really surprised, though, and I know this is 2014, so this is a lot of old news, but I'm really surprised that 70% is that high, considering we do have statements within our policies in the LDS on abortion that say things along the lines of, abortion can be used if it's in cases of rape, incest, or the life of the child or the mother is at stake. So there are things, I'm sorry, not the life of the child, life of the mother is at stake. So there are things in there that you sit there and go, we're giving you an out, but I still think it's a relic of, when was Roe versus Wade? 1950s? So 1950s America?
Oh, it was 70s. But at any rate, the 70%, yeah, I was surprised that it was that high. What surprised me more, though, is that we were higher than Catholics on this issue. The Catholics, I think, were sitting around like 50-something percent, which, I mean, Catholics have been known for a long time as a huge pro-life. It's been a major tenet. I mean, but of course, they're so pluralistic and so diverse and spread across the globe that it's hard to really can them into one thing. Mormons are far more, homogenized. I don't like using that word, but we're far more homogenized when it comes to issues like this. But still, it still surprised me that Mormons were more opposed to abortion than Catholics were.
Yep.
But at any rate, that's that.
Let's go to the next story. This is from the This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things file. This is from the Daily Mail in the UK. And I will say from the outset that the Daily Mail in the UK is known as a pretty salacious news outlet. Mormon Church is accused of insensitive scaremongering after using disgusting banner featuring the Manchester terror attack to ask if people are prepared for disaster. Connor Boyd at the Daily Mail. So an LDS church in the Manchester area used an image of the Manchester Arena terror attack to advertise services, and that was taken down. I'm sorry, I'm completely screwing this up. Basically, there's a big banner in front of an LDS church. They had a picture of police officers and ambulances, and it looked like a terrible scene. And on that banner, it basically says something along the lines of, are you prepared for possible disasters? Come in on Saturday, January 27th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to see if we can help you.
So I mean, it was a really poor choice of advertising an event, right? A preparedness event. It was taking advantage of a recent tragedy and trying to market an event. And that's something that you wouldn't expect from us, right? You'd expect us to be a little bit more sensitive towards things like that. But in this case, it sounds to me like there just wasn't enough checks and balances on putting together this advertisement for it. Like somebody just decided this was a good idea. Maybe one other person looked at it before it went up.
And of course, the spokesperson said it certainly was not our intention to upset anyone, and the banner was taken down as soon as we heard that it might have caused upset. And Brian, I'm with you. This is why we can't have nice things. It was a very poor choice. I will say this was a localized thing that was done. So don't, if you're looking for an extra grind against the LDS Church, grind it against this individual group in England. But they took it down. Shouldn't have been up in the first place. Wasn't right to do. So Mormons, don't be dumb. Like, don't be dumb. Just be normal, good people. That's all you need to do. You don't need to do stupid scaremongery stuff like this. What good is that going to do, right? All right. So this was a very interesting SEO tactic that I saw this last week. This is from KUTV. So the LDS Church is starting to invest in a lot of social media. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. But what they're starting to do now is they're investing in YouTube ads. You know, those ones that kind of play before your YouTube video starts. So one YouTube ad actually has a piece from Russell Ballard's BYU devotional, which says, in part, we need to listen to and understand what our LGBT brothers and sisters are feeling and experiencing. Certainly, we must do better than we have done in the past so that all members may feel they have a spiritual home. Okay, that's interesting. Eric Hawkins, LDS Church spokesperson and the man who does not sleep at all, said, the ads are part of a larger effort to promote messages from church leaders. These ads appear on social media, including YouTube, and address a variety of topics. Here's the best part. Friend of the show, Emily Jensen, was contacted for a quote. And Brian, we might need to have a DTR with Emily before we officially label her friend of the show, but I'm pretty comfortable saying
hey, you know what? I'm gonna be honest. Anytime that Emily writes something, I listen. I pay attention.
I'm totally there. So this is what she said. She speculated that the ads may be targeted to combat the likelihood of negative press generated from the Sundance showing of Believer, a documentary about the Love Loud Festival in Orem, Utah. If so, Jensen said the ads are a smart public relations move. Quote, I'd argue that President Ballard's comments are the most recent positive spin on the church's position regarding LGBT members, she said. People are curious about what the church thinks about LGBT members, and anytime someone brings the conversation to the fore is going to engender public comment and scrutiny. People are going to have these conversations on Facebook and click on the trailer from Believer on YouTube. Shock among shock, the church is investing heavily in SEO, and this is part of what happens. I think it's going to be interesting to see if it's going to be viewed positively, kind of like the church's investment in the Book of Mormon playbill, where people are like, oh, that's an interesting way of doing it. Or if it's going to be viewed as a little bit of a, I don't want to say malicious and manipulative. You know, oh, we see you're watching this. Hey, you might want to see, oh, look, the Mormons, we're not as bad when it comes to LGBT issues.
You know, it's exactly what I thought of was the Book of Mormon playbill. While you were telling me the story, was the ad that we did in the playbill. But this one, yeah, I mean, it does feel a little bit more like, yeah, hey, we're nicer than you think we are. You know, kind of. A stretch, but you know, hey, I can't blame them.
So let's keep talking about this Believer documentary. I'm going to give you guys an example of what not to do if you're writing a review about the Believer documentary and what to do. So let's go first to Kevin Fallon at the Daily Beast, who writes in his headline, and I know the author didn't write this headline. I'm actually going to put this on the Daily Beast. The Imagine Dragons singers war against the Mormon Church to end gay suicide. And this, I read this and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. If you spent any time talking with Dan Reynolds or reading the things that he's come up with, that is the last way that he would describe what's happening right now with what he's trying to do. He would not describe it as a war at all. This piece had hyperbole all around. And I'm sure we're going to debate that with some listeners who are going to say, actually, I didn't see anything wrong with it. So here's a couple of quotes. Reynolds said, this is an issue that needs to be talked about now. I don't feel a need to denounce Mormonism. I do feel a need as a Mormon to take a stand against things that are hurting people. I don't know much. This is what the author said. And this is where I was like, dude, you have no clue what you're talking about. So why don't you get a clue before you actually write a piece like this? So the author says, I don't know much about Imagine Dragons. I don't know much about Dan Reynolds. I wasn't aware that he was a Mormon and certainly wasn't aware that he was a Mormon seeking to reform the church's stance on LGBTQ rights and acceptance.
So this guy was the perfect guy to choose to write this article then.
Right. So, Kevin, you probably got this assignment and figured, we'll just do a couple of Googles. Maybe we'll talk to a couple of prominent podcasters. All right, I got enough for a story here. But here's the problem. No one's going to take it seriously, especially among the demographic that you might want to take seriously, because it is such a half-aid article that you wrote that you didn't even bother to do any research. You didn't know anything about Imagine Dragons or Dan Reynolds. Then why the bleep are you doing this stuff? This was a review of Believer by a dude that doesn't seem to know that much about Mormonism.
So what I love though, Brant, was that you're getting really fired up and you almost said half-assed and then you realize that we don't swear on this show. and you did half aid. But it took me a second to figure out what is half aid, right? It's I was thinking the Spanish word jefe, like what is this half aid thing?
Who is this boss that you're talking about?
Yeah, right, exactly. Let's move on to give me an example of what you think that a review Believer really should look like.
So let me just say this. We are trying to get a screener of Believer because, Brian, I think that you and I could actually do a very good job offering a review. So anyone with PR contacts.
I actually went to Love Loud, so I think I could do a review of it, especially if I see myself in the crowd doing my dad dance.
See? And you know what? You should even start demanding royalties and stuff like that. All right. So let's talk about what a review of Believer is supposed to look like. This is from Derek Clements at the Daily Herald. Imagine Dragons lead confronts the LDS church, his church, in the Sundance documentary Believer. So, whoa, that was a really deep breath and I didn't mean for that to come out so loud. Oh boy. All right. So let's talk about, this is a quote from director Don Argent. He said, "We knew right out of the gate we weren't looking to do the going clear version of Mormonism." If you guys remember, Going Clear was the expose that was really, really well done about the Church of Scientology. It was done a couple of years ago. It wasn't about that. It was about telling Dan's story. And obviously, we have to get to the issues. We have to get to some of the history. But it's not a slam piece. It's not a takedown piece on the Mormon church by any stretch. It's about people within the community wanting something more from their religion. And I think in that respect, it's kind of hard to argue with it. Here's what Dan Reynolds said. I don't feel any need to denounce Mormonism. I think it would do no good for me to walk away from the faith. I think there's a lot of parts of Mormonism that I cherish and love. And I believe if a house is burning, you don't just walk away. You stay and you try and put out the fire. And that's my goal. And Brian, I was reading this going, wow, this is someone who understands Mormonism and is writing about it in the context of everything that's happening with different LGBTQ issues. And I'm sitting there going, that is a good review. That is a review that if you're on the fence, if you are a more conservative-leaning Mormon and you're on the fence about seeing it, you need to read that review to understand that's what this documentary is trying to do. Okay, so let's move on. Brian, I think we need to do what Mormons do best, and I would also add to that, we need to do something that Mormons sometimes need to do more of, and that is comfort those that stand in need of comfort. This is from Josh Weed at joshweed.com. Turning a unicorn into a bat, the post in which we announced the end of our marriage. First, there's a write-up out there from Larry Curtis at KUTV. Don't bother with that. And I'm being dead serious about that. Because basically what he does is he takes this very beautifully written piece by Josh Weed and his wife, Lolly Weed, and tries to distill it down to a few bullet points here and there.
Oh, he murders it.
He's doing it such an injustice because it's like, okay, this guy was kind of a deal and I got to write about it. And so, okay, here's what you need to know. And it's like, no, I talked with my wife about it, Brian, and she read about half of it and said, I really need to read the second half of it. That's how important it was for her to read that whole thing. So let's give you some context. Josh and Lolly made headlines about 5 years ago by coming out as a mixed orientation marriage. Josh is gay. Lolly's not. They were married. This week, Josh and Lolly announced they would be separating and getting a divorce. So, Brian, this is something that affected me a lot. It affected you a lot. I remember when Josh originally wrote his piece 5 years ago. So give me some why would this story be a big deal right
now? Okay, so first of all, Brian, I actually really didn't want to cover this story because it's really none of our business. This is their personal lives. Now, of course, they did put a post out about this, which makes it public. But at the same time, kind of like, give them some space, guys. Give them a little space. We don't need to crowd in on them, start trying to go after the quotes and start trying to go after the interviews. Let's just let them just meditate on this and let's just offer them our support and our love from a distance. So I really didn't want to spend a lot of time on this. However, the story is a big deal because 5 years ago, they were kind of intentionally or unintentionally, and I'm leaning towards the latter, set up as kind of the template for fixing gay marriage, right? So there, and I remember when their story came out, and I think it was 2012, through LDS Living, and I think it even made like the front cover of their magazine, their print magazine. I remember actually saying, I was interning at the church history department at the time, and I was up in their cafeteria, and they had the magazine there on the table, and I was reading the article. And that night, I remember like getting emails and Facebook messages from my family circulating it around saying, see, all you have to do is just marry straight, and everything's going to be great. And I'm going, you guys are out of your flipping mind, especially because Josh himself made it very clear, this is not a recommendation for everybody. In fact, it's probably not a recommendation for anybody. It's just what I'm doing, and it's what's working for me. Well, I mean, it came to an end. And, you know, this is their deal, right? So let's just back the heck off and let this just be their deal. Just give them some love, give them some comfort, But yeah, it's already being weaponized out there, which drives me crazy.
Well, and I think that's the big thing. This is a big deal because they were held up as the poster child, especially because they were weaponized back in 2012 to those who were gay to say, see, here's all you got to do. Just do what they do, which was completely against what Josh originally said in his post. And then now that this happens, which by the way, that's a very personal and hard thing for them to be going through. And kudos to them for being open. I don't know if I could be that open with people on the internet. What do they owe to any of us to say that stuff? But I will say this, I'm with you. And we saw this with Savannah. We saw this with so many different people. It really, really bothers me when people start taking these things and weaponizing them for whatever thing that they want to do. Either A, see, this is all the problems with it, or B, see, these are what we should be doing here and blah, blah, blah. I will say this. I think that for everybody out there, we need a call for civility and for rational behavior. I was posting on Facebook and there was a thread where we were talking about this. And basically I said, look, we at the Mormon News Report, we're going to practice something called common decency. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to post the link in the show notes. I strongly, and Brian, I will speak for you because I know that we feel the same way. I strongly recommend everybody read this. It's a long read. It's a hard read, but you know what? It's really important that we read it. And I will say this. I don't know if Josh and Lolly are going to listen, but I will say this. We see you, we hear you, and we love you. And that's all we can do. So let's go into the top story today. This is from the Mormon Newsroom. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA statement. Okay, so they issued this statement on January 26, 2018. Important context. The LDS Church First Presidency was organized, the new First Presidency with Nelson, Oaks, and Irene was organized on January 16, 2018. 10 days ago, 10 days, we have a First Presidency, and now they're making their first announcement through the Mormon Newsroom. Immigration, and this is only bits and pieces of it. Immigration is a complex and sometimes divisive issue. As we have stated before, we believe that our first priority is to love and care for one another as Jesus Christ taught. Each nation must determine and administer its policies related to immigration. The church does not advocate any specific legislative or executive solution. Our hope is that in whatever solution emerges, there is a provision for strengthening families and keeping them together. We also acknowledge that every nation has the right to enforce its laws and secure its borders, and that all persons subject to a nation's laws are accountable for their acts in relation to them. We welcome the sincere effort of lawmakers and leaders to seek for solutions that honor these principles and extend compassion to those seeking a better life. Specifically, we call upon our national leaders to create policies that provide hope and opportunities for those, sometimes referred to as dreamers, who grew up here from a young age and for whom this country is their home. They have built lives, pursued educational opportunities, and have been employed for years based on the policies that were in place. These individuals have demonstrated a capacity to serve and contribute positively in our society, and we believe they should be granted the opportunity to continue to do so. So I read this first, and when I read that first little bit of the first paragraph, I was like, okay, this is a typical news release. They're commenting on a major public policy that's going on, specifically here in the United States. They want to acknowledge all sides, but they don't want to take a side. Okay, I get it. I'm not surprised at all. And then they go through and say, we're not going to talk about a specific legislative or executive situation, but guess what? We're going to talk about a specific legislative or executive situation. And not only are we going to talk about it, we're going to take a stance. Brian, I don't think there's any shock at all to read that and go, yeah, I kind of know where they stand on the DACA issue.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time though, Brant, they issue this statement, and I got to say, are we going to be hearing Mormons testifying about DACA next Sunday at Fast and Testimony Sunday? Are people going to be actually talking about this at church? Are people going to be aware that they even issued this statement, number one? But number two, is it something that Mormons are actually going to embrace at all, or are they just going to just let this kind of slide off of them and just not even really think about it? Because it's a pretty big deal if you think about it.
I mean, I'll say this. I don't think that people are following posts to the Mormon Newsroom as closely as we are. If you were to talk to your everyday, I don't know, John Doe church member that you saw in a congregation in Provo, Utah, they may or may not know about this. I don't think they're going to take a strong stance either way, but I think this does lead to this path that the church has gone down, specifically in regards to refugees and those who are, this probably isn't the best word to say, but disadvantaged. And I like things like that, especially if some of those things are pushing back against the traditional standard that we have in the LDS Church of being conservative and Republican. These things are pushing against that. And I was just having a conversation with my wife about my thought that religion should make you uncomfortable. And this is going to make people uncomfortable. And good, good. Because what we need to do is we need to hear the stories of these people and not just view them as, oh, these illegal immigrants, but view them as, that's Javier. And I know his story. And I know how difficult this is. And wow, I actually have some complex thoughts about this because, wait. That means that he's going to have to leave here and potentially go back to where he came from, where he doesn't know the language. He doesn't know anything about it. He's whoa, what if that happened to me? And that's what I want people to do is put that into your own sphere of where you're at and quit looking at it like us versus them, but view it as like, guys, if we're going to take the things that we see in scripture seriously, that means that we kind of need to, I don't know, view ourselves as one huge family and refer to each other as brother and sister and actually mean it. That's what we need to do, which Brian, I think leads into the thought that we had. It's a little bit different, but the thought we had for the question of the week this week.
Yeah. Let's do something a little bit more personal with the question of the week this week. We want to hear your refugee story. Did your family come to America seeking political asylum? Have you been involved with any of the current refugee efforts or in your ward, not just you as an individual? Message us, call us. Call us at 801-987-0192. We do love getting those voicemails. We love playing them. So call us at 801-987-0192 or send us an email at mail@mormonnewsreport.com. And we'll be right back.
Even though President Dallin Oaks has said it's dangerous to label ourselves, let me tell you about one of the most important labels you could ever have. An insider. See, in the world of online Mormonism, everyone either is or has an insider. And to quote our old nemesis syndrome from The Incredibles, because I know we all have that memorized, when everyone's an insider, no one will be. It's kind of depressing. But you know what will set you apart from the other so-called insiders? Becoming a Mormon News Report insider. Ah, see, that's what is the most important thing, and that's the most important label you could have. We've been doing some soul searching here on the Mormon News Report podcast. We've been tweaking, and we'd like to introduce you insiders to the Mormon News Report Deep Cuts. It's kind of like the extended sessions, but what Brian found is that once the recording light goes off, there's usually about 15 more minutes of commentary analysis and, frankly, ranting that I've got to get off my chest. Plus, we got loads of goodies for you. We're playing around with live streaming. So if you want to send us your hot takes while we're recording and you're watching us live, that's an option for you. Do you want to pepper me with potentially inappropriate and TMI type questions about this weird thing with, you know, a bathtub and Jell-O? Well, there's an option for that as well. The possibilities are endless. And once we get to $55 per month in donations, we can go ahead and flip that switch and go live on Facebook every single week for less than the cost of a meal to get the latest scoops from your insider buddy who once took out the trash at the church office building. You can be on the inside loop for the best in Mormon news, commentary, and snark. It's simple. Visit patreon.com/Mormon News Report. That's patreon.com/Mormon News Report and sign up to be an insider today.
One.
We'd like to welcome onto the show Heather Harris Bergevin. Heather started her education.
Hey.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, you did. You did good.
Awesome. Heather started her education at BYU and is finishing up at the University of South Carolina, a Gamecock, from what I understand.
Yes, I am.
And the author of Lawless Women, a book of poetry about, well, there's a lot there. I'll just put it that way. And here's the thing. It's really good. And I'm not a poetry dude, so that should tell you something. It's for our buddies. It's from our buddies over at BCC Press. And I'm learning that really what they put their stamp on comes out very, very good. So, Heather, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited.
I apologize for my froggy voice. I had the option today of like super sultry alto voice or no voice. So if it's too sexy for your people, I'm so sorry.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, I think we could all agree that like your froggy voice now is better than no voice. So I'm good. Okay. So
I hope so.
So I gotta ask you, when BCC came out with the post where they announced your book, right? And I'm full disclosure. I said in the intro, I'm not really a poetry dude, but through Rachel Hunt Steinblick's book and from your book, I'm not saying like I'm gonna go out and buy the latest book of poetry, but I kind of get it now. Okay, so
right.
In their original post, they have this great quote from J. Golden Kimball. He goes, "The Spirit said I should devote my time to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I should not be under the law of lawless women anymore in time, as I have fulfilled the law and am now free from such spirits. And yet, Lawless Women is the name of your book of poetry. So basically, how do I put this lightly? Is this a book for uppity women and rabble rousers?
Oh, totally. Mm. Yeah. No, there's nothing I love more than rousing some rabble.
And women who are uppity.
It's mostly, I don't use that term usually, but I am Southern, so I heard it definitely. Mm. I have a tendency to accidentally speak my mind a little more than I intend to. Mm. So that definitely would apply.
So it's interesting that that's the title that you chose for the book, Lawless Women, because as I'm reading it, I'm reading a, how would I describe it? It was almost a, I'm completely blanking on what it was called. It's the, almost a civil disobedience in the book. Was that what your intent was to take a couple of things and needle with them a little bit and see where you could go in poetry?
A little bit, because I'm always fascinated by the stories of people. The Lawless Women quote, I had heard, I think it's Heber C. Kimball, I'm not absolutely sure, but from Lindsay's podcast. And when I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, there's all the work that I had been doing, the things I've been writing, a lot of fairy tale and mythology. And what I'm interested in is the stories, how they get translated or mistranslated over time. And it had never occurred to me really growing up in the South, I don't have a lot of access to like LDS history that doesn't just come from the Ensign. And not that that's not good, but just that I didn't have a lot of access to other things. And being able to access that now as an adult, it was exactly like what you were just saying before. You were talking about that religion shouldn't be comfortable and that we shouldn't be othering other people. And I think that when I was looking at all these stories of whether it's mythology or fairy tale or whatever, my brain says, well, what were these people thinking? What were they doing? And people are saying, you know, this is the Wicked Witch in the forest. Maybe she's just like a lady that likes to be introverted and live by herself, you know? So that's kind of where my brain goes with those things. And especially with like LDS history, because I just figure, you know, these are the women that, you know, weren't well-behaved. They were the well-behaved women that never make history. They were the ones that didn't choose to be well-behaved. And history might not have liked them, but their stories are sure interesting.
Well, and really, the more I study, especially, I would call it like Utah period LDS women's history, the more I'm fascinated. And I actually use for the term rabble rouser with the utmost affection. I consider myself, I consider myself a rabble rouser. Like, I love doing it because I love kind of, you know, messing with people. You know, my poor wife has to deal with it all the time. But that's really, you are exactly right. Like these women who, frankly, sometimes I think I worry that we sanitize a little bit. And that's why I liked Laurel Thatcher Ulrich's book so much, was it showed that these are strong, powerful women who knew exactly what they were doing. And yeah, the only way you make progress sometimes is if you push a little bit, and pushing is going to make people uncomfortable. So let me ask you a little bit about the format of the book. So it's poetry, which is an interesting way to examine some of these concepts. So what is it about poetry that allows you to get into some of these details and examine some of these concepts in a different way?
I think that it's that it's more encapsulated, and that, I mean, I do have some longer poems, but I think it kind of shrinks it down and distills it a little bit. So when you're working in poetry, you have to, it's not going to be a 16-page short story, which, not that there's anything wrong with that. That's just not the format that I write in. So if it's going to be a page long or a page and a half long poem, it's kind of got to be, you have to keep shrinking it until you get to the meat of it. And I don't know. I like it. My poems tend to be a little bit too long sometimes, at least to me, but it's not like the Odyssey. So I figure I'm still okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's almost like it forces you to have some structure around it, because you're not, you know, like you said, you're not given 16 pages to just go with it. You have to really distill it down and focus. And even some of the structuring of how the poems are, I found myself going to different words and thinking on them a little bit more. So it's tough to talk about this without getting into some of the poems. So would you mind reading us a couple poems? Can I
of course.
I'm going to do this like a listener request or a call-in request.
Of course. What do we want?
Okay. Could we do ease of the way?
Yeah, we could do that. And actually, I was thinking about that when you were speaking before, because I was thinking about that with the DACA statement that was this week, yeah. And also with LGBT, which I try to ally for. I'm not LGBT. That's not my situation, but it's something that I try to better understand. And we have a tendency to other people that aren't like us, to people that aren't exactly like us. And that's kind of what this poem is about. It starts out that being Mormon isn't hard, but it could easily be being evangelical isn't hard, or even being American isn't hard. So it's not just specific to us, but that's the way that I wrote it. All right. Ease of the way. Being Mormon isn't hard when you're normal. If you're, well, seronormative, average, regular, just a guy, you know, cis, het, not too smart. I don't mean disabled. That's not easy. I'm not saying it is. We don't have enough parking spaces, one or two on each side of the chapel. That gets filled by the old people pretty fast, so there's probably not room for your wheelchair. It's super easy, though. As long as you're not depressed, because then you're depressing, and nobody wants to be around depressing people. So make sure to smile and hide that while wondering who else is doing the same. Don't have a child who has ADD, SPD, ASD, or who just asks too many damn questions. We don't want to distract the other children from learning how to obey. We can deal with all that, really. Inconveniences, trifles. You can be female. I won't complain. Black, even. Mexican. Don't tell me if you're one of those undocumented kind, okay? Shoot, you can even have a queer kid, but not too queer. We support equality in workspaces and housing. We're totally progressive like that. As long as you don't, like, you know, make it super obvious or, like, promote it or anything. It's just so simple. Be married, but not to anyone abusive. And in the temple, don't be divorced. And be happy, but not fake happy, and not the kind that comes from sinning. And be righteous. Be studious, but not anything we didn't give you to study, and not history or older doctrine or what we said that we don't say we said about stuff we don't really want to think about. Be good. It's simple. And if possible, be a guy.
So, Brian and I are both dudes. So, and I'm okay. So
let me just chime in real quick here and say, I just looked at it as a checkbox list. And I was like, okay, I got that one. I got that one. I got that one. I got that one. So I passed the list is basically what I did. That's how I saw
it. Yeah. So you're good. You're good.
So there's gotta be something that kind of started that thought in you, because as I read that poem and it was a little bit longer, but as I read it, I was sitting here going, holy crap, this is totally us. We're okay if you're different within our range of comfort. Don't get too far outside of that. We're okay if you how would I, and this is probably, I don't mean this to be dismissive, but I mean this in the sense of, like, this is how we Mormons are. We're okay if you're different in, like, a kind of a cute way, but don't get too far, or else we get a little weird out by that. So where did this concept come from?
I think it's something I've been thinking about for a long time, because I've been partially disabled at some point. I spent a year in a wheelchair at one point, things like that. And then I have a family and friends with children who sometimes the primary is really not sure what to do with them. Sometimes they're magnificent. I got to tell you, I am so amazingly lucky right now, because, like, our primary president is amazing, my ward is amazing, but I have lived in those wards, you know. And and then I had been listening to people of color speak about how it can be so difficult, and I realized I couldn't understand that experience, because I had never had that experience. I mean, I grew up in the South. I had good parents. We worked very hard to not be evil people who are racist. And yet cultural racism is everywhere. And it made me feel ashamed that I had gotten to like 30 or 35 before I was like, oh, I can see that now. Man, how could I not see that before? So between all of that and the November policy, it just kind of was one of those things that had been percolating for a while. You know, you kind of get something in your head and it just sort of spills out.
So let me do another long distance request and dedication. Although Brian, I'm going to dedicate this poem to you. How's that? Could you read?
you're so sweet, Brian.
I am. Could you read for me, Heather? Could you read your poem Hyperbole?
Oh yes, I love that one. That was a really fun one. Let me find it. This one I wrote actually after a friend had said some stuff about how difficult it was for them to hear some of the descriptions of motherhood. Because we have this, this glorious aspect, this magnificent, you know, oh, motherhood is the closest to God, which is awesome. I love being a mother, but there's a lot of really hard parts about it too. And that's kind of what this is about. All right. It's called Hyperbole. There are two different voices in this, so hopefully you can hear the shift. You don't blog? I can't believe you don't blog, she trills, astonished in my direction. I write, she continues, every day, all the cute things they say, the sweet pictures, all of it. All, I say, do you? Do you write all? The dirt, the hands that stink of pee, the Alfredo scalded to the pan, whatever weird thing that was, the cat lay offering to you as head of pride, the mummified tree frog in the corner of your unswept bedroom, all of it? She fumbles, well, no, they won't want to remember all that stuff. And then, brightening, I scrapbook too, all the pretty bits, the outings, awards go here, color-coded, acid-free. But I stare. Journal? Do you journal? Things you can write, truths nobody can see until long after you're dead? Oh no, she says, I blog. I can't believe you don't blog. You should, you know. It's a good way to remember. We go back to our class on family history, she's teaching. And I wonder, in 30 years, will her daughter smile at carefully chosen stickers that cut, or mourn because she cannot emulate the ideal established by her angel mother? That's the end of that one.
That was awesome. And I loved it mostly because that opening line of, you don't blog? Which is like, oh man, that is something. Although if I think about it now in 2017 or 2018, it's like, you don't Insta? Like, you don't post
right?
An amazing picture of your amazing life all the time?
So when I read the poem, I thought of the word pedestal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
That how we tend to pedestalize women in general, which is a form of sexism, of course, but even more so within Mormonism, how we pedestalize motherhood.
Definitely. Yep. And we get this this angel mother concept. And I think one of the difficulties for me is, I mean, honestly, I don't remember everything about my childhood. I don't think anybody does. And I remember all the good stuff because we like to remember the good stuff. We have a tendency to delete pain from our memories. And that can be a really difficult thing because later on we're thinking, oh, my mom used to take me to the park and we used to go to the zoo and the museum. And we remember when we wore those cute little dresses for this particular photo shoot and all the pictures and things like that. But we don't necessarily remember all of the things and all the hard parts. And there are so many hard parts. And that doesn't mean we have to dig down in them and be whiny about them constantly. But I think acknowledging them and the incredible amount of struggle it is to be a mother it's been very freeing for me because I don't feel like I try to whine about it, but I feel like, you know, I try to approach things with humor and be like, dude, like my youngest name when he was growing up, his nickname was Sir Pantless because there was no way we could get him to wear pants. You know, it's just the way it is.
You know, it's interesting you say that I don't think it's too much of a secret. At least I don't think my wife is going to get too mad at me. But for us, we struggled with infertility. And it was interesting that once Ashley started talking a little bit about miscarriage, it was almost like she found this community of women who were going through the same thing. And what I've seen, and granted, I can't even imagine what that would be like. But what I've seen, at least among some of my wife's friends, is they are much more comfortable in 2018 talking about that kind of thing. And it actually creates this healing element. And I wonder if we could just talk about the fact of, you know, your kid didn't really want to wear pants. And not that I want to equate the two of them, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, we're all just trying to get through life without looking too stupid and just trying to do the best that we can.
Well, you know, I actually, I can't understand completely because nobody can understand anybody else's experience fully, but I spent probably the first 3 or 4 years of our marriage with a lot of infertility. And that was extremely difficult as a Mormon woman. You spend all of your time being taught that this one thing is this thing that you're supposed to do. And you get to be an adult, and some people don't want to be mothers, and that's fine to me, but I wanted to be, and I couldn't be for the longest time. And it was extremely traumatic because it felt like there was this one thing, like God wanted this one thing, and I couldn't get to it. It didn't matter how hard I tried or how hard I worked. I couldn't get to it. And for me, eventually we figured out some of the sources of the garbage that was going on, and that progressed to that point. But it was extremely, I spent years not speaking of miscarriages because it was, you don't talk about those things. And when I finally, people would come to me and they would, you know, young, fairly useful people, I guess, I don't know, for myself, I would teasingly say I was sending off pheromones that said, you need to talk to Heather about this. But anytime I would miscarry, they would come to me and be like, oh my gosh, you would make such a good mom. You like totally need to be a parent. And I'd be like, thank you. That's really awesome. And I eventually went to our Oregon ward at the time. And I said, look, this is what's going on. You know, I need mercy. I need you to not ask me these questions because it's extremely painful. And immediately I had this sisterhood of women that gathered around me and loved me and said, I know, I've had this experience too. And I had no idea. You feel very isolated in these things until because there's so much cultural shame, whether it's, I mean, regardless of what it is, whether it's to do with infertility or difficulty in parenting or having a child who's not neurotypical or any of these complications that are different than the plan that we had. And it makes a massive difference to realize that there is a gathering of people that say, yes, I completely understand that. I've been through that. That's not what your value is based on. You well, have I, value, I, you know.
Well, and I appreciate you being so open and honest with us. And I want to thank you for the book. Like I said, I'm not a poetry guy. I don't know. Maybe you and Rachel are starting to convert me. So you can find Heather's book, Lawless Women, through BCC Press, Amazon.com, local Utah area bookstores like Written Vision or Benchmark and other places like that. Thank you so much, Heather, for coming on. We really appreciate it. And we'll be right back.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, we love books, don't we, Brant? And we love the stuff that BCC Press is putting out. We really appreciate having Heather here with us. Man, they're putting out some good stuff. And you know, there's so many publishers out there that are putting out great stuff to be more thoughtful and engaging with your faith, with your life as a Mormon. One of those publishers is Greg Coford Books. They are an independent publisher that specializes in Mormon history, theology, philosophy, scripture, and other genres. They've got memoirs. They've got personal essays. They've got all sorts of stuff. They've actually won more awards than any other independent book publisher on this topic of Mormon studies. So Greg Coford Books is so happy with the Mormon News Report that they are pleased to offer our listeners a 15% discount from their website at gregcoford.com. Simply enter the word news report. It's all one word. It's all capital letters. Into the discount code box at checkout to receive your 15% off of any order. Just to let you know, orders over $50 qualifies for free shipping in the domestic U.S. area. And if you're in the local Wasatch Front area, you're welcome to stop by, say hi to the office employees, and pick up your orders in person rather than waiting for it to be shipped or paying money for it to be shipped. The next scheduled release is coming out, as of this recording, tomorrow, January 30th. Whom Say Ye That I Am? Lessons from the Jesus of Nazareth by James and Judith McConkie. We got a copy of this book over to Brant, so he's going to be talking about this book probably in a week or two. And this book takes a look at the historical Jesus in his social and cultural setting and contrasts his interactions with individuals and institutions. For Latter-day Saints, this is a look at the life of Jesus in a way that is rarely discussed in your Sunday school classes. This will be available again Tuesday, January 30th, and you can get your 15% off by entering News Report, all one word, all capital letters, at gregkofor.com. That's GREGKOFFOR D.com.
And folks, that is our show. So what did we learn today? We learned that warm is going to warm. We learned that Mittens is still Mitt Romney. And we learned that sometimes we make statements in the church where we don't want to say something, but we actually, you know, do end up saying something. Don't forget, this show is brought to you by The Cultural Hall Podcast. Be sure to check out the rest of the shows available at theculturalhall.com. If you like what you're hearing here, you can get articles of news over there where they talk a little bit about some other stories that we're not covering. They also do some interviews if that's your thing. And you can find all of it at theculturalhall.com.
And those who have written us iTunes reviews, we really do appreciate it. Don't forget, we are still running our Dream Jell-O campaign for Brant. So every iTunes review that we get, I will buy a box of Jell-O that we will donate to Brant so that he can fulfill his ultimate dream of encasing himself in Jell-O in a bathtub.
So wait a minute. Does this mean like I'm actually going to have to do this and like have picture documentation? Like people are going to have to see me do this?
I'm thinking that we might live stream it, Brant.
Oh, what did I get myself into?
So remember, every iTunes review gets a box of Jell-O to go towards the Dream Jell-O campaign. We are currently sitting at 15 patrons, giving us $30 a month. Very generous. We appreciate it. We're trying to get to $55 a month to go back up to the Facebook live stream. We did Facebook live stream last week, but it was with a software system that neither Brant or I were very happy with, to be honest with you. It was very limited in its functionality. So really, we want to use the best possible software to make it a great experience for you guys. So $55 a month is what we're trying to reach. That's only 15, if I'm doing my math right, $25 more than what we have right now. If we can get 25 supporters who listen to the show at the $1 a month rate, then we will be there. And you know what you'll get from us? You will get our deep cuts. And those deep cuts, they're pretty awesome. And you're going to get your own feed, RSS feed, if you want to add that into whatever app you use for your podcast, and you'll get all of our shows, our normal show, and our deep cuts on one feed.
And as always, if you'd like to reach out to us directly, you got a few ways. You can email us, mail@mormonnewsreport.com. You can hit us up on Twitter, just look at The Mormon News, or you can look us up on Facebook, just search on Facebook for The Mormon News Report Podcast, or you want to leave us a voicemail or maybe even a text message? I'm okay with either one. 801-987-0192. I got that specifically so that you all can interact with us. If the take is hot enough, we'll play it next week on the air. We will be back next week with more news, commentary, interviews, and a little bit of snark. Until then, we'll talk to you again after a while.